Earnhardt Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? I can't hear you. How are you today? Oh, that's better. Thank you. Someone out there heard me, and I know who it is. We'll get to you in a moment, Alan. Just stay still. Don't go anywhere. Okay. So today is a very special day. It's my 8th anniversary of hosting It's All About Food, and we're going to celebrate and party today. Alan, I hope you brought some good treats for us to talk about. Okay, let me just bring you on. Alan Ruttiger, I wanted to have him back as a guest just because. Do I have to have any more reason than that? This is like for me, everybody, and I wanted to talk to Alan. So briefly, Alan is a writer, food designer, blogger, public speaker. He's served clients as a private chef in the U.S., Europe, and Australia. Raised in Mexico City, he acquired a taste for exotic food early on and soon developed a passion for flavor and beauty that drives his diverse creative culinary style. He's the author of a number of cookbooks that we've talked about right here on It's All About Food, including Speed Vegan, Extraordinary Vegan, and Paleo Vegan. And I just miss Alan, because we used to talk a bit on another show I did here on Progressive Radio Network that I do no longer, which was called Ask a Vegan. And I miss you, Alan. So let's chat. How are you?
Well, I miss you too, Karen.
Now, the funny thing is, we have never met in person.
We came so close when I was in New York a little over a year ago.
I know, and I wasn't available. We were going somewhere or something. It just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
It'll happen.
Well, maybe it happened already in another lifetime.
Oh, and now we're just trying to get back together, and it's just not working.
Exactly.
I'm married. You've got this wonderful husband, boyfriend, whatever
he
is.
Yes. Gary DiMattei, the other co-founder of Responsible Eating Living. I call him Mr. Gourmet. When we're the swinging gourmets, I call them a lot of things, actually.
You're definitely swinging.
Definitely what?
Definitely swinging.
Yeah, we're swinging. Woo! Okay, so I don't know when the last time I spoke with you. I think it was when you were doing Paleo Vegan.
You haven't even seen the almond milk book then.
Oh, the almond milk. Of course. The almond milk. I remember that. So we need to talk about milk a little bit. Somewhere along the way, but I know you've been involved in some other exciting projects, so let's get up to date.
Well, I try not to get into the boring projects. They have to be exciting, otherwise, you know, you just lose interest. It's just kind of, eh. I have a job.
I know
like,
that.
Like, you're like 15 years, and it's working really well for me, you know, because I get paid to do what I love to do, which is to come up with new recipes constantly.
Right.
And it's
so this
it's
is
a fun
food service, like a delivery service where people order
it's,
meals.
It's called Green Chef, and people can go to greenchef.com and look at it. They have different types. They have, you know, paleo, schmaleo, all the different ones. And then they wanted to add vegan because, of course, vegan is big, and now it's even bigger for them. They were interviewing people, and my nephew was up late looking for a job because he just got back from the Peace Corps, and he just texted me and said, you should totally do this. It was like 1 in the morning, and I happened to be awake. And I looked at it, and I thought, yeah, this is totally what I can do. And so I didn't have any of the standard requirements like, you know, the BA or MA or whatever it is, and the work in a restaurant for the last 5 years and all this. But I just sent them my resume, and they interviewed me, and I got the job. Boom. Just like that.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it's fun.
Did they ship all over the United States?
Mostly. There are a few areas I think that I'm not sure if they've got it down yet. Far flung from the distribution points, but anywhere on the East Coast, because there's a distribution center in New Jersey somewhere, so the people that pack the food there. And then the entire Midwest and most of the West is shipped out of Aurora, which is right near Denver. And I'm sitting in my car in Boulder right now, taking a break from my job. Hmm. And I have to drive here from my house, which is that's the only downside. It's an hour and a half each way.
Wow. No way.
Yeah. But I got That's a nice new car. I got a little Subaru Legacy with a, you know, manual transmission, so it's like a little sports car. I don't mind it.
Okay, so how many new recipes do you have to come up with every week?
I think the maximum I've done is 5 because it's not just like, oh, create a recipe. It also has to be doable for the average person. It also has mm-hmm. to be, and there's some things. There has 10 ingredients. They have to be able to do it in half an hour, maybe 35, you know, on the outside. And then, of course, it has to be the right weight and the right cost for us, you know, so that we don't lose money on it. And there's a lot of requirements, actually. I'm getting to where I can kind of tell when I'm creating it what's going to fly and what's not going to fly. And then it has to pass the testers, and it has to pass our, you know, my peers, all the other chefs. We get around and taste it. And there are a lot of little points where it has to, you know, we've got to tweak it and improve it and make it more, you know. My palate is geared to Mexican food and Indian food and all that hot stuff.
Yes.
And what doesn't even register to me is black pepper. To somebody else, it's like, oh, this is very spicy. So
that's funny.
You have to learn to coax the flavor out without taking off the upper layer of their tongue.
Well, you brought up some interesting points and things that I've been experiencing from time to time when asked to create recipes. There seem to be a couple of key things. One is this speed concept where people have to be able to make food in under 30 minutes or under 20 minutes. And
yeah,
so your time
frame,
the 35 minutes, does that include cooking or is that just chopping and prepping?
No, that's the whole thing. Well, we do a few things for them. And if anybody goes to the website, they'll see like one of the ingredients can be, because when I first saw this because I went to the website before I, you know, started trying to apply, and I saw the parameters of what you had to be able to do, and it's 10 ingredients. And at first I thought, oh yeah, and then you start thinking, well, wow, you know, salt, pepper, olive oil, 33.
Yeah.
But
right.
there's a few things. They expect the average person to have olive oil or some, quote, cooking oil in their house, salt and pepper, you know, things like that. They're, that's pretty much it. Beyond that, then we supply it. But when we make a sauce for somebody or a salad dressing and we send it to them in a container, so that's one way around it. And then they don't have to do all that part of the work.
Okay.
If possible, we can dice onion, quarter inch perfect dice. We have an incredible machine. That just, you put in the onions and boom, they come up perfect little dice. No weepage,
right.
Nothing. Just like perfectly, like I cut up myself. And then sometimes we'll dice, sweet potatoes. So you can toss it with some oil and some spices that we also send, and then roast it in the oven until they're crisp or whatever. So there's shortcuts that we help them with. And, our testers don't like to do any cutting. So if they don't complain, then we figure we've got the average person, you know.
Well, this is an incredible concept. I know it's very popular. For me, I have this tremendous negative knee-jerk reaction about it just because I'm comfortable in the kitchen and I like to cook. But I'm not like most people.
You are certainly not like most people.
I'm not. And
yeah, you're
and
one
so
of a kind.
I'm what?
You're one of a kind. You're unique. You're
yes.
Baron Hardglass. Well, I mean, come on. Why did you not say more?
I guess so. So I want you to help me understand more about what people like about this service.
Well, you know, since I've started doing this job and driving 3 hours a day as part of my, you know, commute, it has made sense that somebody who works a regular job, is not a cook, is not trained at all, doesn't really want to cook. You know, all they want to do is to eat some decent, healthy, fresh food. Oh, and by the way, all of our produce is organic. All of our ingredients are organic except for a minor percent of some spices you can't get organic and stuff like that.
Right.
But they know they're learning. I mean, this is extremely encouraging because it means that people are waking up and saying, you know, I cannot eat out every night and I cannot eat takeout, you know, every night. And I can't just eat junk. I mean, I want to live, you know, I don't want to just enjoy the first half of my life. I want to enjoy the whole thing. And if I don't take care of myself, the last third of it is just going to be living hell, you know, or it's so expensive because of healthcare, which is actually disease care. And yep. So they're starting to think about, well, what can I do then? And I think, you know, Blue Apron and these other companies started to come out, offering you a chance to cook at home. And then the CEO of this company, who's a fabulous guy, he and another friend thought, well, why don't we do this one, but do it organic and focus on veggies, you know, even though some of the options are meat or fish or whatever, load it with vegetables, you know, make that the focus and make it what they call veggie-tastic, you know, something where, and make it unique. And instead of just having some kind of, I don't know, apparently some of these other companies, and I don't want to run anybody down, but apparently they just have sort of like an aggregate kind of way of finding the recipes, what do people like, and they just kind of put it together. Whereas we have chefs who actually are chefs, and we put it together. We create new things with interesting flavors and different ways of using different vegetables, and so it's exciting and it's fun. And of course, we try to make it a healthy meal as opposed to just something that tastes good. And again, help people to cook at home without feeling like they have this job to do when they get home from a long day at work. It's like, sure. Nothing like, oh God, you know, I got, what am I going to make? I got to get this out. I got to get that out. And not knowing how to cook, they don't get inspired because they haven't done it. It's like an art they've never practiced. So they don't, their juices of creation are not flowing, so to speak. So they'd rather just order something out. And they're getting to the point now, which I was saying, I find so encouraging. They don't want to eat that way anymore. And this option, I mean, you pay like, I think it's like $80 for three meals for two. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be hard pressed to get that in a restaurant, but plus you have to tip them and, you know, you have to go there and everything. And this way you're getting a home cooked meal with fresh, fairly fresh. I mean, just as fresh as you would get in the supermarket. Vegetables, organic, and directions with pictures. You know, the whole thing. And you get a home cooked meal. I mean, that's, and to me, if somebody prefers that, I'm willing to give them that they're not having to work as hard as I do. Yeah, that's fine. I enjoy it. They wouldn't.
Cool. So, you know? Do you think that people are learning how to cook from this experience, and maybe actually, some of them will end up doing it on their own after a period of time?
I think so. I mean, I wouldn't say the majority. I have a friend who had been using the service like before I joined the company, and she said, yeah, you know, I actually learned some cooking techniques from doing that, some things I didn't know. So, of course, she liked to cook to begin with. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, when you do something over and over again, you get good at it.
Right. That's good.
That's how we learn any skill. We just keep doing it, and pretty soon we're good at it. So I do think so. That doesn't mean that people are going to say, well, hell, you know, I don't need all this help. I'm just going to go out and start from scratch. A lot of them are probably not going to. I mean, you know, and that's okay. You know, not everybody is a cook. Not everybody's a football player, you know.
At home here, I have a gazillion tins of herbs and spices because I want to have them all whenever I want one in particular or 10 in particular. I want to be able to like pinch of this, pinch of that, whatever. And I'll create recipes, and some of them have herbs and spices that the average person doesn't have. And I know you like your herbs and spices. You were raised in Mexico.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so Mexico City.
I like to have at least 10 different kinds of chilies, okay?
Exactly. So,
two or three of them fresh.
Do you include special spice mixes in your boxes?
Absolutely. Well, each box, you know, I mean, because we don't just make Mexican. We try to create new, different kinds of cuisines from all over the world, anything from our background that we've cooked before, that kind of thing. And we send them just exactly the amount that they need, so there's no waste. So they're not paying for a jar of something that they may never use again because they just don't know what to do with it because they're not us, right? So we send like little containers of along with the sauces, we send like little Ziploc bags of different spice mixtures that go with that meal, and they're pre-measured, so they'll just throw in the direction will be just add the You know, mm-hmm. and they don't have to measure it or anything, just throw it in. And then they don't have to worry about what to do with the rest of it.
Now, do you assume people have certain appliances in their kitchen? Or they don't have to have anything?
We don't assume they have a toaster. We assume they have a stove, which has an oven, you know, and a broiler. When we're just doing summer, we're creating recipes for summer. Actually, we're just almost getting to fall now, because we have to go through this whole process before we can send the product out, right? So we're now developing. Well, actually, in the dead of winter, you know, we're developing things for spring and summer. But what was the question? Jeez, I got on my tangent.
The question is: do you assume people have any appliances?
Oh yes, no, we don't. No, we assume. Yeah, very good. We assume, you know, the junk that people have that they think are kitchen tools. The little Rubbermaid spatula with the little pink handle, you know, things like that. We don't assume anything. We give them a list of ingredients, a list of pantry items they may need, like just salt and pepper and olive oil, and then we don't even consider for the vegetarian and the meat. We don't even consider butter a normal. We have to send them a little pat so they can, because we don't assume they have anything. And then for vegan, I mean, you know, we don't assume they have anything, and we don't assume they have a Vitamix so they can make their own almond milk or their own cashew cream. You know, we say anything that's got to be blended, we blend it, and we send it to them in a blended form. We don't assume they have a mixer, anything like that. We assume they have a whisk, and if they don't have one, well, then they better get out their fork and work it over. You know, but we don't make assumptions. And I was shocked when we don't assume they have a steamer, we don't assume they know what a steamer is. we go to the lowest common denominator we can, because we want people who don't ever cook, don't know how to cook. We want them to be able to do this, you know, and they can, in fact, you know, we cook with cookware that's the standard cookware. We don't get out the copper or anything like that, you know, because it's unfair. If it works for me, why shouldn't it work for them? Well, because you have good equipment. Well, that's a good excuse. So we take away the excuses, you know. We cook just on the standard stuff, and it's a concept that I was entirely unfamiliar with, as you know.
Yeah. Now I can understand a little better now how meals could be made in 35 minutes or less, because some of it is done already.
Right. And we assume that, but one thing we do assume is that they're not adept. So we try to make it as easy and painless and frustration-free as possible.
Speaking of that perfect diced onion. Now, when I make recipes and I'm asked to estimate how long it takes, it takes me no time at all. But from time to time, I've worked with people and, you know, nothing against any of them. I really respect when people want to try something new and learn how to do something. But an onion that might take under a minute for me to chop can take 15 minutes for someone.
Right.
Who is painstakingly going at an incredibly slow pace just because they're new at it.
Right.
So that time frame is very variable depending on who it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think it will vary. And I think people know that going in, most people will assume, the reason it's taking me this long is because I've never done this before. But the good news is that, again, if you practice an art, you'll get good at it. And so if you have somebody who's subscribed, I mean, you can order just one box, or you can subscribe and you get a box every week. And that's, what are we having this weekend? Okay, it arrives on Thursday, and you have Friday, Saturday, and Sunday taken care of, or whatever. And after a while, you do get good at it, even with a dull knife and, you know, bitty kitchen, you know, I mean, you will get good at it. And if you have a dull knife, you're thinking, why won't it cut? And it's, you know, maybe it's not sharp. You may go out and get it sharpened. And then, look at it now. I'm zipping through it. you know, this is what I had, you know me, I've been trying to encourage people to cook and eat at home. This is something that I can do for a living, mm-hmm. you know, and help them do that. And right. they're not going to be me, because only I am me, you know, but they're not going to be a professional cook, but they can cook and eat at home. And that's all I wanted, because I know that the more you cook and eat at home, the less you're eating processed junk and the lower my cost of healthcare will eventually be. Because oh. fewer people will be getting sick.
Yes. We'll talk about healthcare in a moment. I want to get all political right. later, but not quite yet.
Okay.
Okay, good. Now,
it's your show.
One more thing about this delivery thing. People's eating styles are becoming more and more specific. Many people eat a diet that is free of so many things, and mm-hmm. oil-free, salt-free, sugar-free, soy-free, nut-free, gluten-free, what other free?
Fun-free.
Dairy, you know, even when we're talking vegan, they've got to be free.
Oh, yeah.
So
well, almost vegan
diets.
Especially.
Yeah. So when you're creating a recipe, I mean, I imagine you want to appeal to the least common denominator. So what are you making?
Well, you know, I do. I mean, I do try to appeal to the widest audience. But at the same time, people who are going to, say, go on an oil-free diet, mm-hmm. they're going to have to study it. You know what I mean? They're going to have to go to McDougall's workshops or something to learn that new way of cooking, because it's just not normal. It's not what everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So they're taking it upon themselves to learn, okay, well, if I was going to do it this way, I have to do it this way instead, because this, you know, I have to compensate for the fact that I'm not sauteing. I'm actually just boiling the stuff in a pan or whatever their method is. So they're going to do that. And again, the oil is in their control. If that's not a pantry item for them, we don't have to worry about it. They've taken it upon themselves to change their lifestyle.
Right.
And they will have learned what is necessary for them to know in order to pursue their lifestyle. Because you cannot do it in a restaurant. You cannot do it in a fast food joint. You cannot do it with processed food. You're going to have to make it yourself. So they're already doing that. And if they become interested in our service, it's they're going to have to fudge it a little bit. They'll still get pre-cut or prepared or pre-measured stuff, which is all organic and all good. So at least on that level, they're good. They're just going to have to try it their way, because they're not normal. I mean, I don't mean they're abnormal people, but they're not the norm. They're not.
Yes.
And by the way, normal is overrated, right?
Oh, like
it's normal.
Yes.
It's normal to yell at your spouse. It's normal to, you know, there's a lot of things
that
pass for normal.
It depends on who you are. Let's not go there. Or we have gone there. I mean, what's normal for the man who is playing president at the moment is not normal for most people.
That man is one of a kind, too, thank God. But we won't get into that. We'll just go gloss right over this. And go right. What were you saying?
What was I saying?
Don't get me started on the Cheeto.
Yeah, well, maybe I should get you started.
Well,
here's your moment.
This is my moment. Well, you know, to me, it's not even because I have a very low expectation of politicians. I've met
Good.
Politicians. I've cooked for politicians.
That's right.
The only one that I would speak very highly of, and I really don't, he's passed away, was Shimon Peres, who was a fabulous man, worked really tirelessly for peace and
you
really tried everything
him?
He could. One time, he was a guest at a house.
What did you
and,
make?
I made duck.
Oh, that was.
but he
that
said
that
duck
Alan.
Was magnificent.
Okay.
That was before my time.
Yeah.
And I cooked for President Clinton. I cooked for Hillary Clinton separately, different times. And politicians are, you know, they're a totally different breed. They. You know, you make enough promises, and you make enough deals, and you make enough compromises. There's something where you look in their eyes, and they're not like the average person. they're not there. They're off somewhere until photo op time comes, and then they just pour on the charm, and it's like, oh, that's the one on TV. Yeah, I remember him. So I don't really have a very high expectation of them. All I expect is that they be outwardly decent. I know they're probably not decent people. You can't really be fully. I mean, you know, the higher up you go, the more compromises you've made, and so we really don't know who they really are. All I ask is they be a decent appearing person and speak to our better side, the way Barack Obama did. I mean, he did a lot of things I disagreed with. You know, the murder by drone program I'm not too keen on, and the friendliness with Monsanto. But all I ask is that he be a gentleman or a true statesman. That's all I ask. And what we have right now is just not that. It's not normal. It's not what we need. We don't need someone like that. We need someone to steady us. We need someone to say, it's going to be okay. Don't worry. You know, we're going to work through this. We'll do this together. You know, whatever it takes, you know, just be decent. Just be a decent human being. That's all I ask. I know that there's going to be all kinds of nasty deals made in the back and compromises and, you know, with corporations and bad people in other governments and everything. But at least don't be a jerk. You know, just don't be a bad example of a human being. That's all I ask.
I like that, Alan. And I haven't heard that from anywhere before, and I think you sum it all up very well.
Yeah, that's all I ask.
We don't need much.
Down. Yeah,
just
I mean, you know, and I don't have high expectations because this is the way the world works for now. You know, we are evolving as a species. We are getting better. It doesn't look like it, but believe me, we are. And not all of us are going to make it.
You know, yeah.
Some people are just going to stay that way, and they're going to, unfortunately, they're just going to have to die off so that the young ones who are more idealistic and loving and caring, they're going to take over. Every step, we are getting better if we just can survive the process.
Yeah, if we can survive.
But, you know, my son and his friends and, you know, I mean, I have such hope because they're like I was, only they are arriving at a stage much further along than where I arrived.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were the first, my generation, we were the first ones that said, hell no, we won't go. You know, this is not a just war, and we're not going to go over there and kill those people. You know, no one ever questioned it before. If they did, they went straight to jail, you know, or got beaten over the head with a stick. Well, some of us did, but, you know, it is evolving. We are getting better.
As a civilization, at least here in the United States and other countries, more people feel empowered to speak their mind.
I've never been to a woman's march before. This is one of the most exciting and wonderful things I've ever done. It was just so exciting, so beautiful. There was no violence. There was no. It was so organized. Everybody had a unique sign. Everybody was friendly to each other. But it was a protest. It was definitely a protest, and I loved it.
I think some of the problem, I mean, other than, what do you call him, the Cheeto, or what was your name?
I have other things, but you know, yeah, the so-called president, we'll call him.
So-called president. There are a lot of problems with him, but some of the problems are related to this evolution where things we might have accepted 10 years ago, certainly not, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we don't accept today.
Exactly.
Well, many presidents have fooled around. Okay, we know that. And they've harassed women in many different ways. We know that. We just don't accept it anymore.
Right.
We've raised the bar. And we're rebelling because we don't want to go backwards. At least those of us who have evolved a little bit.
Well, right. I mean, case in point, once you go vegan, you just can't say, well, nah.
Well, some people do.
Well, you can. That's what I mean. But it's what, see, there's, it's not about one human being evolving. It's about the entire species evolving. And there are parts that are still holding it back by their limited beliefs and their vengeful thoughts because of the injuries they sustained as a child and as a culture. So it's going to, I mean, like the Middle East, it's going to take a long time for them to get to the point where they can really just let go. But the young people in Israel, the young people in some of these places, they are the hope of that place because they don't want it to be that way. They don't understand why it should be that way. And then so it's a snowball effect. It's eventually, you know, what seemed normal just is not normal anymore. You know, it's not normal for me. My father evolved before my eyes. He was a, you know, Marine Corps colonel, and then he was a CIA officer, and he overthrew the government of Guatemala, and he was a station chief in Mexico City, and he was, you know, homophobic and, you know, everything else. A really fun guy, but he had those serious drawbacks.
Yeah.
And he evolved while I was alive to be anti-war, anti-CIA, and he risked his life to speak out against the CIA's nastiness. And he came to embrace people who were, you know, homosexual and people of different viewpoints. And it was fantastic because he completely changed. He shed those limitations that he had, which he thought of as strengths, you know. Saw them, they came to know them as weakness and came out. And it was incredible. And so if my father could make that transition in one lifetime, what if you know, someone's child, you know, of course I went way further than but that's what I do. But that's,
no,
that, I mean, this is the story
saying.
Of the human race.
Our parents often learn from their children. It goes both ways.
Right. But some parents don't.
And
you know,
some parents
it's my way or the highway. And if you don't like it, my house, my rules, you know, that whole thing. And I feel sorry for them because really the name of the game is evolution. We have to evolve. We have to start where we start and improve, you know, become more of our true potential as what a human being can be. And you know what a human being can be.
What's apparently frustrating.
When you hear somebody singing, like I would never buy Adele's albums. I just don't care. But when I hear her sing, it's just like, God, that is beautiful, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the potential of a human being, you know, to sing from the heart, to do where there's just no filter, when it's just coming.
Yeah,
that's our potential. To do art, to protect the defenseless, you know, to have compassion, to be kind. This is not something that animals just invent. You know, this, you know, you, I don't know if you've ever saw that. It was on the internet, on YouTube. It was in India. There was a monkey that got injured, and there was a train coming, or I can't remember what it was, but it was going to get worse. It was in traffic, and this other monkey jumped off and went and rescued the monkey. Was injured and dragged him to safety.
Mm.
And you know, that's not normal monkey behavior, but there is something in every living thing that will respond if all the situations, all the variables are right. It's just like, no, I have to help. You know, and this is, you know, I don't do religion, but this is the divine. This is the spark of life that is in every living thing. And that needs to evolve. That needs to burst out. And we are the ones who are most suited to do that, to make that happen. I mean, if my dog can do that, I can sure as hell
maybe
do that.
Maybe not. Maybe not. Alan,
I'm
impressed.
No,
you're,
I can.
You're extremely articulate and eloquent with your words.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I have to add one thing.
Yes, please.
We have limited time. We don't have forever. When I hit 60, it was like, I used the S word. It was like, oh my God, it really is true. It's very short. You know, I'm 2/3 done, you know, by most standards. And,
right.
You know, whatever you want to do, you have to do it now. If you want to be that, you know,
be now.
That be that perfect example of what a human being can be, you better do it now. Because or you better get started at least, because it may take you some time. Do it now. Enjoy your life and foment the enjoyment of life. Try to remove the things that inhibit enjoyment and try and not, you know, put more obstacles in the path of other people and your own. You know?
That's hard to do, Alan,
with.
Many people.
So is cooking.
But I think this is even more challenging, but maybe not. But I think for many people, it's extremely difficult to take the time to look inward and actually ask those questions. What is it that I want to do? What is it that I want? Who do I want to be? What are the obstacles that are currently in my way, and how can I change them? Those are scary, difficult questions.
They are, but the answers are actually quite simple. The obstacle, the only real obstacle, is between your ears, and the thing that you want is right in your heart. And if you're about to do something really questionable, like ethically questionable, and you take a moment and stop and just take a deep breath and think, is this a good thing to do? You know. You may not listen. You may think, yeah, well, screw it. I still want to do it. But you do know. And if you stop and listen to your own heart, not forget about the ethics, forget about the Ten Commandments, forget about, you know, some people may not want to forget them, but just put them aside for a moment and just ask your heart. Just calm yourself and say, is this something that really... would this benefit me? Would this benefit other people? Would this move me along to the ultimate goal, which is to be perfectly happy? You know, the objective of all life is to feel joy, to feel ecstasy, to be just thrilled with life. That's what we're here for. If that's your scale, then okay, you might want to drink this whole bottle of gin. There may be situations in your life that have brought you to the point where you think that would really be the top of the top. So ask yourself, will drinking this bottle of gin right now, tonight, will this make me happy? And the answer is, no, it won't. It'll the first part will be kind of fun. And then I will black out. I won't even remember the second half of the bottle. And I may do things that I'm embarrassed to hear about. I may hurt somebody. Physically or just emotionally, and I will feel like living hell in the morning. And, you know, if I do this often enough, I'll be very sick, and then probably I'll have to get a liver transplant. You know, it's not that hard. It's not that hard. You just have to be dedicated to finding the real joy.
It seems like it's not that hard. I'm totally there with you. I'm continually asking myself the question, why is it so hard for so many people to make change? Just becoming vegan.
It's conditioning.
I mean,
with vegan, it's like, well, Thanksgiving dinner. What are we going to do then? And what about, you know, there's all those excuses. But those excuses are where? Between your ears. It's the voice in your head. And that voice in your head is the same one that's telling you to drink a bottle of gin. You know, it's not. Yes. It, you know why? Because the brain has no feeling. The mind has no consequence. And you think, well, yeah, but what about depression? It loves that stuff because you become all important. And as long as it can make you all important, everything is just, oh, it's having the time of its life. And it's telling you what a jerk you were to drink that bottle of gin. And you should just go ahead and kill yourself because you're never going to be any good at anything. And you're just a loser. And, you know. And then you get all the – and that thing, it loves drama. But you, the real you, we love peace. We love to feel good. We love to feel love. We love to feel inspired. We love to look out of our window and see something and go, wow, look at that. It's so beautiful. We are the appreciators. That's what we're here for. We are – if there is anything like a God or anything like that, the reason we have been created was to have at least one person appreciate the beauty that is all around us. You know, to appreciate the miracle of being alive and to be able to breathe and to be, we're made out of dirt. I was looking at it. My wife was working in the garden, and I was helping her. And I was looking at the plants, and they're all the different ones. There's zucchini growing, and there's this growing, and that growing, and the flowers, and the grass, and some she's pulling out the undesirable ones, the weeds, you know. And I was thinking about, my God, you put a different seed in the same dirt, and that seed has a programming that will make it grow up and become a specific plant, with some of them with a fruit or a flower that is absolutely exquisite. But they're sucking the same minerals out of the soil, up mm-hmm. by the mercy of water. You know, it just comes, it liquefies it so that it can get sucked up into those little things. And then we eat the plant, and it turns into us. It completely is transformed into the particular things that we need it to become.
Yes, and when we die, it's all borrowed.
Yeah, it's all borrowed. This body, it doesn't even belong to us. We're just happen to be this like a driver of a car, but even that is like there's the driver has hands on the wheel. We don't even have that. We're just the witness. And what we're really meant to do, I mean meant to, I don't mean like design, but you know what really makes us feel fulfilled is when we experience joy and when we experience gratitude. We see something and we go, oh my God, I can't believe how lucky I am. How beautiful is this? How good this food tastes. You know, how beautiful that person is, how kind, and how kind this whole universe really is, because it's absolutely the most hostile environment you can imagine. If we went out a few miles into space, we'd freeze to death. I mean, just instantaneous. First of all, we couldn't breathe. But this one little pebble has just the right amount of pressure, just the right amount of gravity, just the right amount, the mix of air that makes it possible for us to exist. And it's exquisitely beautiful. And we could appreciate it. We can go, that is incredibly beautiful.
Just like cooking, we are not trained in this society to recognize our gratitude. And it's an excellent practice to, when you wake up in the morning, think of 10 things that you're grateful for. Whenever you're feeling down or frustrated or tired, think of 10 things that you're grateful for and try not to repeat the ones that you already said in the last few days, you know?
That's don't like get, in Peter don't go Pan, rogue on
Christmas,
it.
Pops, scotch, don't or candy, or whatever one of those things were.
Right.
Yeah. But gratitude, you're so right, because when we have that sense of awe and gratitude, it feels good. And we're living our lives moment to moment. What's happened already happened. What's coming in the future is not now. It's only right now. How can you feel good in the right now? Think about
how can
you're
be bored
for.
How can you be bored what is happening now has never happened before and will never happen again. Each moment is absolutely unique, and you're getting one after another after another after another. And if you're paying attention, those moments fill up with joy. If you're not paying attention, it's just like you're in a dream. You're just kind of wandering from one thing to another. And if you're being pampered, it's good. If you're not, if you're being inconvenienced, it's hell. You know, and you're missing the whole show.
You're so right. And I needed to hear this. I know all of this, but it's so good to hear it from another.
I needed to say it, I guess.
Perspective. I needed to what?
I needed to say it, I guess.
Yes.
Because it, these things that we know, I mean, the reason it makes sense to you and the reason I said it is because we know this. The heart knows this. And it needs to be expressed, because we're often just perfectly fine with expressing. Like, you know, it's so perfectly okay to express anger. You know, people are yelling about things. But when somebody starts talking about love, it's like, this mushy stuff. You know? we need it. We absolutely need it.
Yes.
It's the lubricant that makes it possible to survive in a world like this and have gratitude.
That's why I say on this show, we not only tune in live, because this is a live broadcast, but we are tuning in love. And if you can't do it any other time of the day, at least do it while you're listening to this program, because that's what It's all about food, but it's about tuning in love and experiencing. I do this out of love and no other reason. I'm sharing what is important to me in this life and giving thoughts to others that I hope will be helpful and informative to do, as you say, experience joy.
Make joy cool again.
Make joy cool again. So, one of the things I wanted to mention before that's frustrating to me about the political situation right now is I've been focusing on the food system, fighting pesticides and genetically modified foods, getting back to the foods that are not only healthful for ourselves, but are more sustainable for our fragile earth and are kinder to animals. And as we're losing some of the rights and regulations that we had that protected our food, protected our environment, we seem to be at a point where we may be losing them. We can't even focus on these other things that I talked about because we're losing ground.
I think part of the reason is it was so shocking to have this turn of events, and we're not willing to just have things go back to the way they were before we started improving them. And I think that it's always a pendulum effect. I mean, you can't just go one way. There's always a swing back the other way. Oh, God, no, then a little bit. But each time the pendulum swings, you go a little bit further. And each time you go a little bit further, it doesn't really swing as far back as you think it's going to. When did you ever hear of a woman's march that spontaneously just started and went and happened not just all over the country, all over the world? All over the world, women got together and said, "Hell no!" This is not okay.
This is just not okay.
You know, and I have high hopes because women have become empowered. You know, and women are wiser than men. I'm not saying this like, you know, patronizingly or anything, but I've learned this. I mean, that's why I never argue with my wife, because it always turns out that maybe I'm right on a certain level, and that's what makes me want to argue. But at the fundamental level, at the level where babies are born, at the level where food matters and the basics of life, you know, having a decent home, having a warm place to eat, living in, women are right. And that's the place that matters. You know, being right in your head doesn't matter. It really doesn't. Because you'll want to think about something else and you'll forget all about that. But you will never forget about the essential things of life: food, comfort, you know, warmth, security, those things that are important to women.
Breathing.
That men seem to
breathing,
just totally forget
breathing.
About. Yeah.
Breathing. You know? I breathe for a living. Yes. Breathing is so important.
Yeah. And so, so, you know, to me, the fact that women are now being empowered and that men are supporting it. I mean, it was one of my favorite chants there were several really good ones, but there was one where the women would all go, "My body, my choice." And all the men would go, "Her body, her choice." And it was like, wow, that event was so beautiful. Because it had nothing to do with the men, but the men were supporting it.
I have to tell you.
It's your body. It's your choice.
I don't feel as alone anymore. Now, I think I came out of the womb an intense feminist, not even knowing what it was. But I never understood why some people who happened to be boys at the time were expected or allowed or encouraged to do things that I wasn't encouraged to do. It just didn't compute. When I was really young, I wanted a gas station to play with. I didn't get one. I had to play with the one that one of the boys had. And there were just little things over time that I was not going to submit to. It just didn't make sense, and I fought it all the way. And as a young adult, I didn't understand why many of my women peers were accepting things. And like 10, 20, 30 years later, fortunately, many women are not accepting these things anymore. So that's evolution in the human consciousness.
That's right. That's right. Really, and it doesn't happen. It's happening in Saudi Arabia. I mean, they're not able to really march because they'll get whipped or something, you know?
Yep, but they're talking.
But they're aware that it's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when they get a chance, they will. It's because evolution, it takes a long time, but it goes forward and it does not go back.
Thank you for saying that. We're going forward. We're not going back.
And we're never going back. It's not possible. You can't go back to the home you were raised in and think of it as home. It's just not home anymore. You know, you go forward. When we emerged from the sea and lost our fins and started walking or whatever it was, we can no longer go back and survive in the water. It's just not possible for us. We have evolved. We've changed entirely. And the purpose of evolution, the thing that drives it, is the quest for joy, for enjoyment, for the optimum, for the best possible scenario.
I want to believe that, but I want to add that part of it is also the quest to make money, and the good thing.
Yeah, well, but that's just the mental part of trying to have a better life, of having
sure.
it be better.
I want to.
I mean,
connect
people
it to,
want money and power because they think that if they have money and power, everyone will do everything for them, and they'll be able to sit around and play cards or whatever it is that they think is going to make them happy. But that's just the thinnest skin on the surface of what evolution is about.
I want to connect it to 20th century foods and plant foods in particular.
Okay.
Because there have been some shocking news items for me. I'm shocked. I never expected to see some of these things in my lifetime, but they're connected to profiting from things that are better for us. And for example, Tyson is investing in plant-based meats.
Yeah, because they're recognizing that they're going to lose a huge section of the market if they don't.
Exactly. So that's a good thing that's related to profit.
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with a profit.
No, but it's related to money, and we're kind of evolving in that way because they're figuring out the direction we're going in. And yes, you can profit from products that are better for us, overall better for the environment and better for our health. I mean, that's always like a knee-jerk reaction, like, no, people aren't going to buy that, or we're going to lose money. No. We can make the better products. And still, everybody can succeed.
That's why I'm working where I'm working. It's that kind of a company. The thing is, there's nothing wrong with profit. The only thing is when you profit from the suffering of others, you know, or the demeaning of others, or whatever the idea that if somebody else gets some, then I get less.
Okay.
Plenty.
We just have 2 minutes left. I just want to ask, put a good flavor in our mouth. Do you have like a favorite thing you just created, or a favorite food combo, or something delicious
I just made the blood orange sorbet the other night, and it was really, really good, and there's still some left. And when I go home, I'm going to take it out and let it sit for a few minutes, and then I'm going to have it.
Blood oranges.
And you grate the zest off, and you make a sort of a syrup with water and evaporated cane juice crystals, you know. And then boil it till it's like a syrup, and then you turn it off the heat, and you add the zest and let it sit for a while to flavor it. And you strain it, and then you squeeze the oranges, all the juice, and you don't strain it. You just take out the seeds, so there's a little bit of texture. You mix the two together. You let it get cold. And then
You put it in an ice cream freezer, and it's so simple. All you need is like 8 or 9 blood oranges. The darker, the better.
Mm, that sounds good. Okay, let's all like savor that idea, savor that flavor. Alan, thank you for this gift of giving me an hour of your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you for asking.
Well, you're the one I wanted to celebrate my 8th anniversary hosting It's All About Food with. So thank you very much.
I'm so honored. To be your never met friend.
I know. You're my best never met friend.
You're my best never met friend ever.
Ever. hopefully that will change.
I love you, Karen.
Okay, big hugs. See you, Alan. Thanks for joining me on It's All About Food.
Next time.
Lots of love and joy to you and yours.
Bye-bye.
Big hugs. Bye-bye. That was Alan Roediger, everybody, and you can find him at alanroediger.com. And looks like we've come to the end of the program. I just want to say a few things. This is the 8th anniversary of It's All About Food. Thank you for being a part of that. Thank you for being my audience. I rarely ask this, but if you can share this program with people you love and care about or rate us on iTunes, do what you can to promote it, I'd be really grateful because I think a lot of the things we talk about on this program are good and important. And the more people that can learn and share some of these ideas, the better for all of us. So thank you for being my audience again and being a part of It's All About Food. Thank you for caring and have a delicious week.